Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to HealthyLife.net's Visionary Celebrity Series, a place where you get to call in and talk live to a world-renowned expert. Today's show is Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, a world-renowned expert on mind-body medicine and patient empowerment. So let's welcome Dr. Bernie Siegel.
I'm just thinking, I mean, I have so many stories to tell because of all the people I've try to help and work with all their difficulties and problems, and that includes myself. And I'd say for all of you to look back at your early life and your troubles and what they led you to and how your parents treated you, because I keep repeating that. One of the most significant things in your life is a simple fact. Did your parents love you? If you answer yes, you'll be a hell of a lot better off and healthier and everything in your life. If you say no, then you got troubles. You know, trying to gain attention and be loved. And I'm not blaming dear Donald Trump, but when you read about, because I did years ago before he was running for presidency, read something about him, and I felt sorry for him. All the things he was doing, because his parents wanted him to be well-known, famous, rich. I remember, and I'm always saying, I used to get annoyed with my family because they loved me and were trying to be therapeutic for me. If I'd say I had a terrible day, they would say, God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. And as a kid, I'd say, oh, my God, what are you talking about? But I learned. There were many times when something not good happened to you, it ended up being good. I mean, one story, I may have told it here, was I saw a guy had, his car had broken down. He was standing on the side of the road, and I was on the way to the hospital, so I pulled over, I stopped, I said, can I help you? Do you need help? What can I do? He said, my car just broke down. I'm not from around here, so I don't know different garages and what to do, who to call. And I was about to, you know, start calling and helping when another car pulls up and said, can I help you guys? What's going on? And we said his car broke down, and he needs help, you know, getting to the garage. And he said, oh, I know the garage. I'm from this neighborhood. I'll get him help right away. So I didn't have to stay there. I could leave. But it turned out that the guy whose car broke down was also looking for a job. And the guy who stopped to help him, they started talking to each other and said he was looking for somebody, you know, to take a position at his business. And when the two of them started talking, he realized, hey, you're a perfect, you know, candidate for the guy I'm looking for. So their car, you know, his car breaks down, he gets a new job, meets, you know, his future boss, and everything works out perfectly. And those are the kinds of days that I always felt I was learning something from. And it's basically what my parents were teaching me. Whereas if everything is negative, 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 you induce more negative. So remember, God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. If a nice day happens, it was meant to be. It's a gift to you. So keep it up. And how do you decide what you do? You do what makes you happy. When I say to my father, what should I do when I grow up? He said, look, there's people all around you who need help. So decide who you want to help, and then make that your business. And I ended up, for some reason, going to medical school. I guess, feeling sorry for people and wanting to help them and be well. And I don't know if today I might want become an artist because I love painting. My house is full of portraits of myself and my family. And I'll tell you why, as a doctor, I use drawings a lot. You know, draw yourself, your disease, your treatment, your immune system. And it helped me decide what they should have as treatment. Because if they drew it as something horrible, I wasn't going to force them to take it. We'll find something else for them. And it made a big difference. And at first in the hospital, you know, Siegel's crazy. But then they all realized, yeah, but he has a lot of good information in those drawings. Did you see them? And it helps you take care of your patient properly and what the patient agrees to and, you know, not what the patient draws in black or when the patient was going to die in purple, the spiritual color. Yeah. Yeah, I always remember the anesthesiologist saying to me, I like working with you. I said, what is that? Why? He said, you just called out to the patient to come on back. How did you know what happened? I said to him, well, I saw a purple cloud come out of my patient, so I yelled if his spirit was leaving to come on back, and it did. He said, yeah, his heart stopped beating. And when you yelled that, his heart started beating again. And I'd say, I can't say that it's going to happen every time, but if you see that purple cloud, then don't be afraid to speak up and say something. But it's, you know, we're here to help each other, because that was, I say, you know, my father's comment always, what do you want to be when you grow up? I don't know. Well, then look out at the world. Everybody needs help. Who do you want to help? And, you know, I ended up in medical school. I don't know. I think, well, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, one of my best friends and teachers, was always saying to me, Borny, that's a Swiss accent, Borny, there are no coincidences. So when you meet people and they have something unique to show you or talk to you about, learn from them. Keep an open mind. See, then they're not afraid to talk to you, and that's something I learned at the hospital. The nurses were always wondering, why do so many patients want to talk to you? You're not the doctor. And I'd say, because I listen and I help them so they can talk to me, whereas their doctor just tells them what pill to take, and they want more help than that. And I'd say to all of you to remember that. And don't be afraid to draw a picture. You can teach yourself. Get a box of crayons so you have all colors available. You could use one crayon or six of them. It doesn't matter. It's what's right for you. But if you said, what job should I take? Who should I marry? Where should I live? What's good for me to eat? It doesn't matter what your question is. Draw yourself doing what you think you should do. And then look at that drawing the next day. If you said, what job should I take? Who should I marry? Where should I live? Look at the drawings you did. And look at which one makes you feel best. Because when you're doing it, the unconscious is a part of what's getting done. And you won't see the message. But when you look at it the next day, it's as if somebody else drew it, and you can walk up, look at it, and say, oh, I know what I should be doing, where I need to live, who I need to marry, what job I need to take. And you do it, and it works. So you're being your own therapist. And as I said, and you can do it with people in your family, too. You know, if one of your kids, I'm pretty sure I did this, we have five kids, when they were ready to go to college and things, Yeah, if they draw yourself at the different colleges you're thinking of going to, and we'll see which one looks the best for you. And I also got advice from some of their principals and others to keep them out of trouble at, you know, at some schools where there's too much going on in some big city, and who knows whether they'd pay attention to their education or to what's going on in town. Yeah, I went to school in Colgate University, upstate New York, and at that time there were no girls there either, so I couldn't get in trouble. I'm isolated in the middle of nowhere, a lot of snow and cold weather, and you didn't find ways of running around and doing things. Every now and then, yeah, with a bunch of guys, we drive to a town and go into a bar, have a glass of beer or something, but that was about it. It was hard to get into too much trouble with no options around. And I'd say think about that with your kids, too. And even with, you know, I get back to talking about drawings. If one of your kids says, I want to go to college, but I don't know what's the best thing for me, say, draw a picture of yourself at every college you are thinking of going to. You know, I don't mean 20 colleges, but I mean narrow it down to 3 or 5, say, colleges, and draw yourself at those schools. And then look at it with them. And believe me, you'll see which is the best. You know, it could be education, it could be social, but, I mean, there'll be things going on, other people, activities. And you'll see from the colors, too, that, you know, the greens and the blues and the yellow energy, those are healthy colors, and you'll do well there, versus orange, a color of change. It's the emotions, the red and the yellow mixed, and or gray or black. You know, those wouldn't make you feel very good if you saw them in the picture. But if you saw a lot of healthy colors, then I'd say, yes, go ahead. That's one of the choices that could work well for you. And now, I wanted to tell you a story. Because my wife and I traveled somewhere. I can't remember where we were going, but, to Hawaii. A patient of mine developed a type of cancer that her mother had died of on the island of Kauai in Hawaii. And my patient here in Connecticut said, I'm going out to the island my mother died on. If I'm going to die, I want to die where she died and experienced her cancer, which was the same type as I've developed. And so she flew out there. And a few years after she went and also died on the island, my wife and I went out when we were invited to give a lecture on the island of Kauai. And the weather's so nice there, I was told it's an outdoor lecture. We'll have lots of people come. You know, the whole town could come and sit outdoors and listen to you. So we flew out there. When we got to the island, went into a big store that was on the side of the airport to pick up things that we needed for the week that we'd be there. And we were walking around, and I noticed my wife had sort of headed off in another direction. And I saw her looking up at a butterfly that was in the store. And I thought, how unusual, there's a butterfly here. What's my wife doing with it? And she put her hand up, and it landed on her hand. And then she walked outside with it to let it go. When we got outside, she held her hand up in the air, you know, so the butterfly would go, and it didn't leave. It just sat there and then jumped on her shoulder. And I said, honey, there's no point in trying to get rid of it. It's not going to go. So come with me. We'll get in a cab and get over to the hotel with all our stuff. And we got in the car, got driven to the hotel, and got out of the cab, and our luggage was picked up and wheeled into the lobby, and we started walking in. And again, I'm sure the butterfly is going to take off, but it stays on my wife's shoulder, goes into the hotel, we check in, up the elevator, into our room, and the butterfly is still sitting on her shoulder. And I said, honey, you can't sleep with a butterfly, you'll kill it. So go outside on the porch, because there was like a little porch on each hotel room, and brush it off, and then come back. So she went out, brushed it off, and said, okay, I brushed it off. I said, yeah, look at your other shoulder. It came back in on her other shoulder. I said, well, we're obviously not going to be able to get rid of this, so let's understand the butterfly made a choice to be with you, so we'll have to be careful what we do. So we put some water and liquids and food on the table for the butterfly, and we ate in a separate table. then when it got to be time to go to bed, I knew we couldn't get rid of the butterfly, but we would try. So I said to my wife, go out on the porch again and brush it off your shoulder and then come in. And she did, and sure enough, it again was on her other shoulder. So I said, it's hopeless. So let's go in and lie down, and the butterfly will have to take care of itself. And we went in, got in bed, and the butterfly did. It took care of itself. And went back to the kitchen, sat down where we put some food and water, and we went to sleep. Next day, we went out to the workshop. And at this point, I have to say, why I'm bringing this up, it's the mystical things in life. Why would a butterfly act that way? And I have photographs that really prove this all happened. I'm not telling a story, because every time I look at that photograph from decades ago, it touches my heart, my wife and her butterfly. But it said there's a message here. And in many ways, a butterfly is. It's a symbol of change. You know, you have to break out of your cocoon, spread your wings. You start out as a caterpillar who becomes a butterfly. Think of yourself as that caterpillar. Go into your cocoon where you can change and make changes and not have other people controlling your life. And then when you're ready and you got your wings and you got your color and decorations and everything, bust out and fly and be yourself and your life. And that's what the butterfly always teaches me. And so we went to the workshop with our butterfly. Got out of the car, let it loose, and it flew over about 90 people sitting out there, and it circled this group of people. Because we were, as I say, outdoors, not in an auditorium. And it flew around and around and never left. And I told everybody what had happened and where it came from. I think they all felt I was a little nuts and didn't know what to believe about me and what my wife and I had been doing. But we talked about the self-healing, the transformation. And those are things that people who understand write about. I mean, not every author speaks the truth about life and the world. They're more often talking about their experience and difficulties. But some know. And I think I began to realize that too, why certain words and terms and things you know, happened to people and they spoke in certain ways because they were paying attention to their hearts and what made them happy when they were making choices in life. And I would hear stories from them. And I would always point out to them that what they did was it made them feel right. I mean, I think I've mentioned it here, but I always remember this one fellow who was a millionaire. And I was speaking at a conference at a big church in New York, and he came up to introduce me dressed in junk. That's the only way I could describe it. I mean, it was like things that other people had thrown out were on him. You know, this loose shirt, dungaree-type pants, and things like that. And I said to him, "You're at this beautiful church. Why are you dressed like that?" He said, "When they tell you you're going to die in a few months, you cancel the dress code at work." And what he went on to explain was, a few years before, he had been told he had a few months to live due to cancer. And he said, "I'm a rich guy. I wanted everybody to know I had a wealthy business doing well. So all my employees had to wear suit, tie, dresses. You know, everybody had to be dressed, looking wealthy and intelligent. And then they tell you you're going to be dead in a year or two." So he said, "I canceled the dress code at work. I told everybody, just relax and come in. That's what I have to do with what's going to happen to me. So just wear what you want, come in, and we'll keep doing our business, but we don't have to put on a show." And he said, "And then I didn't die. And that I realized the change I made in my life was a big part of why I didn't die and I recovered. And I'm going to keep living that way." And that was something I, as a doctor, had seen too. That when people quit their jobs, got married or got divorced, moved, all kinds of things that they wanted to do, and now felt they had permission because of a disease, and then they noticed, "They told me I'd be dead in 2 years, and now I'm 2 years later and feeling better than ever." And what was it about? Yeah, they knew. I moved. I changed my work. It could have been a divorce or a marriage. Who knows? Whatever each person individually needed. But it wasn't necessarily just, "I'll take certain vitamins and I'll eat only a certain food." No. If it feels good, then I'll do it. I want to make decisions based on my happiness. And you have to understand, folks, this is something I learned when my wife died. Within 2 minutes of my finding my wife dead one morning, I thought she was sleeping and I went to wake her up and discovered she was dead. I had a heart attack. I mean, my chest, the pain was excruciating. And, yeah. And I had problems with my heart. I mean, I still have, it's still being treated so that it has a regular rhythm and everything else. But you can tell I must be doing all right if I'm talking all this time. So, yeah, I've learned that the change changes your body chemistry. So your body is now in a different environment. And we're going to take a little break and then come back, and I'll discuss what I mean by that. You know, why should taking a certain pill be good for you, and why should taking a different pill not do you any good? And we'll discuss those things when we come back.
The Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning, fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
Love, Magic, and Mud Pies is a brand new book by Bernie Siegel, M.D. It helps you raise your kids to feel loved, be kind, and make a difference. Bernie, a husband of over 50 years, father of 5 children, and grandparent of 8, shares the gems of wisdom he has gathered from his practice and his own family life. Using his caring, comforting, down-to-earth style, Bernie's book answers parenting questions and gives you a wealth of quotes, anecdotes, and parenting tips, delivered with just the right dose of compassion, inspiration, and gentle humor. Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, an insightful, supportive, must-have guide on every aspect of parenting. Love, Magic, and Mud Pies by Bernie Siegel, M.D. is available on Amazon.com and find bookstores everywhere. Order it today. And don't forget to hear Bernie Siegel's show, Mind Health Matters, right here on HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Okay. Hello, everybody. I was just told we're Bach. But we can be back and not Bach. Anyway, my mind just sort of goes into all kinds of different things when the program stops and the commercial break comes, and then I have to get my brain back and organized again. So here I am. But I think that what would be interesting, see, is how do you know what somebody's experiencing? And when you ask doctors to draw themselves working as a doctor, 90% don't put a patient in the picture. They put in equipment and prescriptions and all kinds of things. And I don't say that you have to be sick if you want to be a doctor. You have to be sick first so you know what it's like. But what I would say is that we ought to have, as part of medical school, a session in which people have to accept that they have a certain illness. Say, it could be a mechanical problem. If you said, I'm going to be an orthopedic surgeon, all right, you have a broken leg, and we'll put a cast on your leg and crutches, and you spend a week that way. You'll be a lot more compassionate when a patient comes into your office with that problem, say. Or if, like, I had pain in my chest, okay, you've had a heart attack. This is what you now have to do, what procedures you're going to go through, will have you swallow pills. It doesn't have to be drugs, but to make, you know, somebody swallow four pills three times a day, and just to imitate what a patient is going through. And then you'd be a lot more compassionate. And you could say, I know what you mean to a patient, and really mean it. And not just say that as if you're some expert when the patient complains about problems they're having with medications or disabilities, and you say, yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about. How do you know if you haven't been there, if you haven't lived it? So again, I would say we could put a, you know, a 10-pound weight on a patient, on a doctor's foot, and say, okay, or a medical student, and say, all right, now go to classes with that weight attached to your leg and see how it feels. And then if something else comes up, we could have them eat a special diet if they're going into some other specialty and know what the patients have to go through, so that we understand experience, not diagnosis. Because as I said, if you have people in your family who are living with an illness, ask them, what are you experiencing? What's it like to be living with this? What word would you use? I mean, I've mentioned that, I know, on other phone-ins I've done. When you say to people, how would you describe what you're experiencing? Failure. Pressure. And some will say, wake-up call. But the pressure was her marriage. See? The failure was more to do with her and her life, even though it's her body that's failed her. She just feels that everything has done this to her. And it's giving people the power back to say, okay, how can I deal with the failure? How can it become a success? How can it redirect me? What can it do for me? Because literally, there are people with life-threatening illnesses who have said, it's one of the best things that ever happened to me. It woke me up. And you know, I've mentioned this before, but the lady who brought me photographs of herself lying naked in front of two giant mirrors, and she said, I knew I was dying. And when I was a child, I had certain deformities of my body, and I didn't like my body. I never liked my body. And now my body is getting worse, and I don't want to die not liking myself and my body. So I put these mirrors up and laid down naked and started loving myself and my body every day, several times a day. And the disease has gone into remission. And she didn't die of what she was told she was going to die of. Had a lot to do with her spinal cord and, you know, loss of certain muscles and abilities. And those are the things, again, I'd say to all of you, love yourself. I didn't say love, you know, what's wrong with you, if you know what I mean. But it is part of you. And love that body that is containing that troubled disease or that problem or broken limbs or deformities. It's you. Love that person. You don't have to love what's wrong. That's not what I'm saying. Love the person who has something wrong. Don't reject yourself because I'm not perfect. Look at how funny I look. You're a beautiful soul. Look at that. So put that mirror up and look in and love who you see. You don't have to like what you see. You can work on changing that. But love who you see, your spirit, your soul. And I think that's something animals teach us. As soon as I just said those words to you, I was just thinking of all our pets. How I don't see them staring in the mirror all the time like, oh, my fur is a mess. Oh, I got a lump. Oh, I this. Oh, I got leaves stuck to me. They still keep on enjoying the day and their life experience and sharing it with me as others share with their owners. And you can feel the warmth and the love. You know, it's like they're petting me with their presence and their love. And I'm petting them for being with me and keeping me warm and sharing their lives. And when you do something for someone else, you'll get a gift. Believe me, you'll feel good about it. And they'll remember you and be happy to do something for you. Whether it's lying down next to you in bed, you know, or licking you, it'll happen, believe me. And it's animals of all kinds that do that. You know, it doesn't have to be a dog or a cat, you know, a furry creature. I've had one of our kids loved, what's the word? You know, turtles and salamanders and snakes and all kinds of reptiles and things. And it was amazing to me how these creatures got to know him and paid attention to him. You know, that's who they'd walk to or follow. And there's a lot more in all these creatures and in us than you might think there is. So you can, and you can reparent yourself too. And what I mean by that, again, is loving yourself. You can put new pictures up around the house and say I love you to yourself when you walk past it. I've mentioned the painting I did of myself with a cap, mask, and gown on. Nobody knows it's me except me. Or if I tell them it's me. And why would I paint myself covered up? Because I wasn't uncovering the parts of myself that were significant and should have been uncovered. And how did I learn that? From reading, you know, books by other people I respected and honored. It's like the sages of the Bible who are telling you about life, too. And so is Carl Jung, and so are others. And more now who have had near-death experiences and all sorts of things and woke up to life and what it's like. So I'd say, don't wait for a disaster. You'll have one, okay? Give yourself credit that I'm going to have a disaster, so let me change and learn. And do that simple statement, what makes you happy? Yeah. D-W-Y-H. Do what makes you happy. And you'll find you get the gift. Your body perks up. You look better when you look in the mirror. And it's all because it literally, your chemistry changes when you are loving, when you're laughing, when you're at peace, versus when your heart has been broken, you've been injured, you've lost your job. All of those things can take you down. But you can also say, I'm going through the labor pain of life, and I'm going to give birth to a new self and make a difference. when you do that, believe me, you'll feel healthier, you'll feel better, you'll see life in a different way. And the reason is all science. As I say, the chemistry of your body, the style of life you're living, make a difference. The butterfly always pops back into my head. You know, think of yourself as that caterpillar crawling around. And you go into your cocoon to protect yourself. But who wants to live your life in a cocoon? You may be protected, but you're not going to be joyful living in that closed, limited space. So you break out. And that changes the chemistry of your body. And you spread your wings. And as I've said before, I'm sure, on out of the book, The Cancer Ward by Solzhenitsyn, you know, the butterfly flutters out of the cocoon, rainbow-colored butterfly. And all the patients in the hospital hold up their cheeks for its healing touch as it flew past. Only the gloomy Padiev, with a hopeless and obstinate expression on his face, croaked out, "I suppose for that you need to have a clear conscience." Folks, if you're doing what feels right for you, yeah, it may be a wrong thing at certain times in your life, but at least you don't have to blame yourself, you know, for being a criminal and your consciousness is a problem. You were doing what you thought was appropriate, and a lot of that will be because of what your parents are like. I mean, I keep getting back to dear old Donald Trump. When you keep reading in the newspaper all the things he's done and is doing, and it's sad. I feel sorry for him. What if he walked around all day saying, "I love you," to those who are his political opponents, so to speak? "I love you." I really think he'd knock them over, because they wouldn't know what to do with him. He's not yelling at them, telling them what they're doing wrong. It's what he loves. And if they woke up to that, they'd feel differently too. So make a list of what would you love in your life. And then work towards it. And tell all your family to do the same thing. Yeah, have a love meeting. And come together. And work on finding love. You know, I keep thinking, it's like that butterfly. Bring the love butterfly into your life. Bust it out of the cocoon and let it come and be there for you.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors, and their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now it even gets better than that, because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com.
The Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What can you learn from exceptional patients? Plenty. No matter what disease you are dealing with, Dr. Bernie Siegel's book, Peace, Love, and Healing, can help you identify the hidden factors that may be stopping you from getting well. What are the hidden factors? Are you ready? Guilt and blame. Find out how guilt and blame is related to your lifestyle and illness. In Peace, Love, and Healing, Bernie, as he likes to be called, will tell you what steps you can take to heal a life and cure a disease. Peace, Love, and Healing. Get it today at fine bookstores or at Bernie's website, ecap-online.org.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hello, everybody. I had a thought in my head and what I wanted to tell you, and it went away because I was, that's why taking breaks drives me crazy. But anyway, what we started with, it seems like, you know, it's interesting how your mind carries you, your thoughts. And 10 minutes ago could seem like days ago as to what you were talking about. And why I'm saying this to you is pay attention to what you're feeling when you feel it. What's going on? What's happening? And even when people blame you for something. I mean, what just popped into my head was one of our five children saying to me, you don't love me as much as my brother. And he's a boy. The one who said this was a boy. We have four boys and a girl. And, you know, that's not true, that I don't love him as much as his brother. But his brother was not as nice a kid as he was. So his brother got a lot of attention because he drove us crazy. He was always doing something. And the one who never bothered us was a sweet, gentle, sensitive child, aware of feelings, and he hurt more because that's the way he lived and paid attention to himself and to other people. Yeah. He's a massage therapist now. And he massages me, and it's such a gift with his love and his touch. But I know he still hurts more because of his, you might say, need for love. And the one who's a devil or a troublemaker or whatever you want to call them, I don't mean that they're evil, but just doing things to get attention, he envies them, or he did, because they get more attention. Yeah, they get attention because if they're driving their parents crazy, their parents have to do that. As I said, I always had a system. each one had their bedroom in a place related to their personality, meaning that the one who drove us crazy most often was going to be located right off the most active parts of the house, like off the kitchen. So we always knew where he was, what he was doing, and the one who's an angel could be way down the hall in the last room where all the bedrooms are, because you don't have to worry when the door's shut. He's not causing trouble. He may be feel alone, so it's important that that part is taken care of. And keep saying, I love you. You can't hurt anybody by saying that, whether they believe you or not. I love you. And you'll be surprised. You keep it up. They begin to realize you do. You do love them. And I have said this myself to them. I don't like what you're doing, but I love you. And that's a difference. And don't forget that difference. I don't like what you're doing, but I love you. And then it becomes clear to them what you can get, you know, upset about when you don't like what they're doing, but that you're not upset about them as a human being. I mean, to get back to Trump, you know, you're not upset because they haven't made a lot of money and are famous. No. It's what they're doing for themselves and the world and how they're contributing, not that they're patting themselves on the back. And I'd say again, it, you know, back to the dear old butterfly that is so beautiful and flies so gently through the air and just contributes to the beauty of the world. So that would be a good way to say to your kids that, what do you want to be when you grow up? But how do you want to contribute to the beauty of the world? As I said, my dad, he worked for American Broadcasting Company and Paramount Theaters and things. And that was wonderful because I got to be free at a lot of movies. Because he would have Paramount get in touch with all the theater owners, depending on where I was living. And I could walk in and give them either a card, you know, with information or my name, and they would let me into the theater to go see a movie and not have to pay for it. And that was fun. But, you know, it wasn't the not paying. It was that your dad did something for you, that people saw you as something a little special, you know, because of your dad, and things were a little different for you and a little more fun. And then people remembered you as a person, and that made you feel good. So keep putting your hand out to help others, you know, for to have the butterfly land on your shoulder and keep its beauty with you. And when you look in the mirror, see a butterfly. That's another thing that's so hard for people. As I said, the monks shave their head to uncover their spirituality. When you look in the mirror, what do you see? You want to cover it up with makeup or a bandage or the way I put my cap, mask, and gown on, like I wear in the operating room? Nobody who comes to my house knows that's me in that portrait, because it covers me. And I've said this before on the show. When I went to paint my wife's portrait in a beautiful evening gown, I couldn't. I'd start it, and I'd say, I don't like this. It doesn't look right. I don't like this. I didn't know what was going on inside of me. And then one day, when she rode her bicycle from her childhood, a two-wheel bike, outside the house, and I saw her riding her bike. I yelled out, "That's you!" And I painted her standing with her bike. And I loved it. And the painting was done in 2 or 3 days, whereas trying to paint her in an evening gown with all kinds of makeup and jewelry, I worked at it for weeks, and I never liked it. Not that I didn't like my wife, but I didn't like the decorations and the appearance. But with her bike, that's her. And that's what I yelled, "That's you." And the painting hangs in the living room. She's gone, but the painting makes me feel her, and I know she's still watching me. And I can hear some crackling in the background. I don't know if you're all hearing it, but don't let it bother you. Yeah, that's life. I mean, that's a good thing. There's static, there's crackling, there's trouble. Just call them your labor pains. And use your labor pain to deliver your new self. Don't forget those words. Because when you're delivering your new self, it hurts a lot less.
A spiritual awakening happens here.